Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we discussed pulmonary hypertension, which is high blood pressure in the arteries that supply the lungs. This month, we discussed trends in cardiac surgery and how AI data is driving the minimally invasive procedure revolution. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. Cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Alan Cheng is also chair of surgery at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, so he knows a thing or two, or 2,000, about cardiac surgery. We talked last year about advances in the field, and we touch on them here as we discuss trends shaping it in 2026. Underpinning all of it is data. Each one of us is a massive data set, and details from every nook and cranny of our medical history helps a medical team understand our personal care needs better. But collectively, it can lead to new generation therapies and applications for patients the world over. For example, Dr. Cheng reminds us that doctors once dreamed up an implant to be a temporary fix to buy a patient time on the transplant list. It proved itself over the years to be a viable long-term solution for many heart failure patients today. It's the left ventricular assist device known as LVAD, and over a decade's worth of data made it a destination therapy. Data is driving advances in minimally invasive procedures as well. Dr. Cheng explains it all.
The field of cardiac surgery have advanced so much in the last 10 to 15 years. We are able to give a lot of options to our patients who need heart surgery. For example, minimally invasive heart surgery. Nowadays, we don't have to open up the whole breastbone or cut the breastbone or cut the rib. We can do heart surgery through a small incision, about 2 inches or so, without cutting any bones.
So we could boil it down to invasive means cutting.
Right. A lot of study has been published in the last 10 years showing that minimally invasive heart surgery provides benefit for a lot of patients in terms of faster recovery, shorter hospital stay, less pain, less infection rate. In that sense, it's very exciting for both the patient and for us who are providing care for the patients.
Once they internalize the notion that they're going to have a surgical procedure for their heart, and then you say, and yeah, you'll come in and then, you know, later in the day, you'll go home. It's hard to wrap your mind around that in terms of the reassurance, in terms of the kind of embracing that reality of not needing the same kind of observation, the same kind of time.
First of all, it's always very overwhelming when the patient or the family find out that they need surgery or have complex heart disease. So it is our responsibility to explain how the whole process works, because it's not just the surgery. It's also the pre-op studies, planning of the surgery, and obviously doing the surgery, but also the post-op care. From my experience, you have to spend time explaining that to the patient and also the family. In terms of minimally invasive, it's not to move them out of the hospital as soon as possible. The idea is to treat the cardiac problems with less invasive approach so the patient can recover faster and get back to their feet faster and recover to their baseline faster. The post-op care is a big part of the care. Not all approach is the same and is the right thing for a different patient. Every patient have a different scenarios. For example, the transcatheter approach is very good for high-risk or frail patients that cannot tolerate surgery. At the same time, for complex mitral repair, you want surgery with less invasive approach. It depends on the patient's situation and condition, but at the same time, with all these tools, has allowed surgeons to decide what is best for that specific patient. I find heart disease is interesting because the heart is not just an organ. It's not like kidney and liver. It's dynamic, mechanical, so it beats 60 to 100 beats per minute. At the same time, you have four chambers contracting in a different way with a very specific rhythm and also multiple valves within the heart opening and closing. So you're treating a mechanical problems. Before the heart and lung machine was developed, it's still you have to go in with a beating heart trying to fix a valve or fix a congenital problem. So that's where you all start. You still require surgery to go in. And then over time, they developed the heart and lung machines, and also anesthesia got better. So heart surgery become very common because you're really going in and fixing a mechanical problems. And then over time, the image, x-ray, echo, and all that become even better. So that allows minimally invasive approach or transcatheter approach. It all evolved with all the technology that develop over time, if that makes sense.
You know, it's interesting because you do consider things like procedures and the devices, certainly the heart and lung machine, anesthesia. That anesthesia is another important component, and even that had to evolve along with all of the technical stuff.
Yeah, even within anesthesiology, it's not just general anesthesiology. There are like specialty trained cardiac surgery anesthesiologists. So it's the interaction, not just by putting the patient to sleep, but it's the interaction with the hemodynamics and the heart and lung machines, and also the surgeon changing the mechanics on the heart. All those interactions has evolved over time. And that's why heart surgery is a big team. We have the perfusionist running the heart and lung machine, anesthesiologist who is specially trained to perform an open heart surgery case, and also they are able to do echocardiogram in the operating room. So all those personnel and team member are specially trained for heart surgery cases, including complex mitral valve repair, valve surgery, tumor resection, heart tumor resections, atrial septal defect repair, or aortic aneurysm resections, and so forth.
In terms of the whole minimally invasive procedure universe, you're all pooling data. I mean, you're all reading what's gone well, and what insights someone else may have had in another center, and there's all of the reporting coming back. How is research shaping the future of cardiac surgery?
Yes, there's a lot of research in the past and currently, but over time, the skill set has evolved, and there are a lot of new tools coming in that can help the surgeon do less and less invasive surgery. At the same time, surgeon use the data that is published and know what is good for the patient and apply those skill set. In terms of the surgery itself, the surgeon applied the newest, most innovative approach with the right skill set. And at the same time, their data showing that what is the best post-op care to be provided to help with patient recovering from the surgery. I think that's the main advancement with all the data being published and what we are looking at.
So when I was preparing for this conversation, I was looking at some cardiac surgery research. And something that came up, for example, was some new thinking on arterial grafting. Now, first of all, if you could explain what arterial grafting is, and basically what this research was saying is, you know what, we rely on too many veins. We should be using more arteries from other parts of the body if we need to replace or graft or whatever. So explain to me how that, as an example, would be data research that's coming to you that might affect how you perform a procedure.
For bypass surgery, the conduit we used is either artery or vein. That's what you're referring to. The most common use artery conduit that we use is the left internal mammary artery. That's standard. And there are a lot of data published throughout the years that using more artery might help with the patency and the longevity of the bypass graft.
As opposed to taking a vein from a leg.
Exactly.
Or so using
exactly.
Artery, but not a vein, because arteries and veins are that different?
The artery have a thicker wall. Without going in depth, the make of an artery is very different from a vein. Artery is the blood supply to your organ. The vein is the return of blood going into your heart. So the mechanics and the wall of the artery and the vein is different. So study have shown that using artery can have a longer patency rate than vein. As a cardiac surgery standpoint, it's very helpful because we can use other artery, say like the radial artery from your arm or the artery from your other chest wall. And we have skill set to use those artery alone during the bypass in a certain way and how we line it up. So there's the option of just using artery instead of using any vein from the leg.
when we talked about how the valve repair changed the surgical landscape, there's other implantables that have revolutionized how some intractable heart issues have been able to get treated.
Once heart failure kicks in, it's more than a valve problem or coronary artery disease, meaning that it become a pump problem. By fixing the valve or fixing a coronary artery disease is not sufficient. You need to fix the pump. Currently, we have artificial hearts, either total artificial hearts or mechanical circulatory support in terms of left ventricular assist device and also right ventricular device. So that has given us the tools to treat heart failure patients, the pump problem. On top of the valve problem, we can do a minimally invasive or coronary artery disease. Over time, the newest generation's LVAD or artificial pump is much smaller, and it has been shown that it lasts longer and is way better at doing its job to treat heart failure patients over medication alone in terms of improving quality of life, symptoms, and survival. At Debora, we are able to provide the care for severe heart failure patients with LVAD or artificial hearts through surgery. And nowadays, the pump is small. We can even implant the pump through an incision on the side of the chest without opening up the breastbone and implant that pump, which will assist the heart to unload and provide perfusions to the rest of the body. That's a direct mechanical treatment for severe heart failure.
The intention of it was to be a bridge.
Yes.
Until someone moved up far enough on the implant list to get a heart. But now we have found that it can be essentially destination therapy, that somebody just stays on the LVAD for the rest of their lives. Has that affected the design of the LVAD? Are these now that it has become destination therapy, has the LVAD itself changed in any way?
The use of LVAD has evolved because of the technology of the pump has evolved. So as you said, it started out as a bridge to transplant, meaning that the waiting list is long, so the patient at the same time is sick, so you need some support with the LVAD to bridge them while they're waiting on the waiting list for a donor heart to become available. So that's the first use of LVAD. And then over time, the pump get smaller and it lasts longer, the option for destination therapy is offered and approved. One is for patient who does not qualify for heart transplant. Either it could be the patient comorbidities, age, patient size, and they are too sick to wait for a heart transplant. So that become a destination therapy. And then nowadays, the line become more blur because of the advancement of the new generation pump. They are so good, and the outcome is not only comparable to heart transplant, but at the same time could be even better in terms of survival and the rapid recovery in terms of quality of life. And also, you don't have to give all those anti-immunotherapy for heart transplant patients. So the line between bridge to transplant and destination therapy has blurred because a lot of patients decide they want LVAD over transplant. One is they don't know when they will get a transplant. Two is it's just less medication they need to take. And they know how long the pump will last, knowing that the data is comparable to transplant nowadays with the new generation LVAD.
What happens when the research is mixed?
It all comes down to the specific needs for that specific patient. Every patient is different. They all have different conditions or different mix of conditions. So the provider, the surgeons have to decide what is the best approach for the patient, not only just based on the data, but also the best approach for the patient. I think that's an important point.
That will always trump
the
latest study.
The latest data, yeah.
Transcatheter valve repair, which is the big dog in minimally invasive procedures. How has that changed the surgical landscape? Because really everything minimally invasive has grown from that, hasn't it?
It's interesting with the advancement of transcatheter valve repair replacement. As a minimally invasive heart surgeon, we become a structural heart strategist, meaning that we have extra tube. We can use open heart surgery for extreme complex case or minimally invasive approach if it is a valve repair or double valve repair. At the same time, we have the transcatheter approach, which is very good for patient who cannot tolerate surgery or any anesthesia anesthetic, or patient who are very frail, then a transcatheter approach will be ideal. So it adds to the toolbox that we have as a minimally invasive heart surgeon to push it towards a less invasive approach. Or it could be a hybrid approach, say like the patient have multiple medical heart conditions. A hybrid approach can be done, meaning that, for example, if the patient have one or two coronary artery disease, a stent can be placed, and then we can, at the same time, if the patient have a valve problem, then we can go in and do the minimally invasive repair, like a mitral repair. So a hybrid approach would be ideal for certain patients. So it's another tool that a minimally invasive heart surgeon can apply to a specific patient, what the patients need exactly.
That's cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Alan Cheng. Join us for the next part of this talk about the trends shaping cardiac surgery in our next podcast, including the use of a hybrid approach in the operating room and how AI is supporting your human care team. It drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at demanddeborah.org.